Hi, everyone. Welcome to UBS Global Research Pod Hub. In today's episode, we are going to talk about a topic that has gained significant prominence since the pandemic, shift in global manufacturing supply chain. Our guest today is Sunil Tirumalai, Head of Emerging Market and Asia Equity Strategy, with me, Sambuddha Ray, Head of Product Management for Macro Research at UBS Investment Bank. Sunil, you probably would agree that this is a theme that is likely to dominate for many, many more years. And I mean, we are potentially living through a paradigm shift, and just one podcast is probably not enough to talk about this, right? So if you're just starting to scratch the surface here, and since you have initiated a new report series on this topic, why don't you tell us what questions you're answering in this first volume?
Hey, thank you, Sambuddha. Yes, this is indeed a very vast topic. We've seen the first generation of supply chain shifts dominated by China and a few developed markets. And in the second generation, we're basically seeing capacities probably moving out of China into other markets, and all of that is up for grabs. There are many economies, both developed and emerging, which are trying to woo those investments into their own countries. A lot of incentives are being thrown around, and China itself is actually determined to move up the value chain. What we try to do in this first inaugural version of this report series is to basically, I was very curious to understand what has happened over the last 10 years, 12 years in terms of capacity and supply chain shifts, which markets have gained, which markets have lost, which markets have moved up the value chain, and so on. So essentially, we took all of global trade, which basically means everything that moves across country borders, except food and commodities, where there isn't much manufacturing involved. So we took everything at the HS code level. That's the harmonized system for trade goods. That's about $13 trillion each year. And then we basically mapped it out and tried to study who is gaining, which markets are gaining in specific segments, which markets are losing, which markets. We devised our own definition of going up the value chain in certain segments, going down the value chain, and so on. We didn't stop there. We basically then went ahead to try and see in each of the cases where markets or companies have gained or they've moved capacities, why have they done that? Why have they gained share? What have they done to succeed in gaining share? What have some other markets done to lose market share and capacities? By talking to our analysts and economists across UBS research. And I think that's the second part which really gave us a lot of insights which we feel can be very useful for, let's say, an aspiring emerging market which wants to be the next manufacturing powerhouse.
Very nice. So let me first ask you this, which are those countries that are gaining market share right now?
Yes, so we try to measure this in a couple of ways, right? So let me just see in terms of market shares, purely looking at goods coming in and out of boundaries and about borders of countries and at what level of value they are in and so on. Over a 10 to 12 year period, clearly China has been dominant. It's actually gained, even post-pandemic, it's actually gained in terms of market share. Right. But if I look outside of China, there are quite a few interesting, points that came out for us. We found that, surprisingly, markets like UAE, Turkey, Vietnam, Mexico, they are right up there. Right. I mean, these are companies which may be small in terms of the size of the economies, but then they're becoming bigger and bigger in terms of their roles. Some of these may not be actually coming up as real manufacturing hotbeds, but just becoming re-export hubs for markets which are within their neighborhood. Across many segments, we found that UAE, Singapore, and Malaysia have actually gained significant market share. Vietnam and Mexico, well, they have gained meaningfully in terms of absolute dollars, those are mainly concentrated in a few segments. What we also try to do is to see who is going up value curves by using a very simple definition of a supply chain competency score, which just measures the ratio of the imports to exports in each category. And again, over there, we found that markets like UAE, Turkey, and Philippines are actually moving up the value curve within various segments.
Interesting. In was there anything that was not obvious in terms of a conclusion? Or let's put it this way: what was the surprise factor? Anything struck you as odd?
So, I mean, in my part of global markets, i.e., emerging markets and Asia, Vietnam and Mexico are fairly well-known success stories. Right? It was not surprising to see their names, come up on some of these. But I was surprised to find Singapore and Malaysia actually come up. It's not something that people readily attribute to in terms of gaining market share competency and market share gains. But it seems like, and then we subsequently spoke to our analysts and economists, it seems like a lot of the seeds for these gains from Singapore and Malaysia were actually sown maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago in terms of specific government policies. What I was also surprised by was about some markets which are actually talked about a lot in terms of market share, in terms of capacity, supply chains, but not featuring so strong in our work. So India, for instance, its role in global supply chains is small, and it's remained largely stable. There are some gains, but there are some losses as well. But it's nowhere close to some of the other markets like I mentioned, like Vietnam, Mexico, UAE, Singapore, etc.
Very nice. And before we move to the next question, one question that came to my mind, remind us, what's the look back period for your analysis? So when you say market share changes, so are you taking a look at the last 10, 15 years? So what's the time period you're looking at?
So we're starting from 2011. So we take a stop in 2019, just before the pandemic, and then now. Uh-huh. So it's basically a longish time period of about 10, 12 years, with a closer look, with a pre-pandemic to now kind of period.
Fair enough. All right. So we learned who's gaining share, and so Sunil, for an emerging economy that is aspiring to gain foothold in manufacturing, what would you say are the sectors that should be relatively easier to kind of look at, based purely on your on your work?
Yes. So I mean, we actually approach this in two ways, right? So let's say you are, given the responsibility of building up the manufacturing capabilities of an economy, which is not yet having a lot of manufacturing going on. Which sectors would you want to look at, right? A lot of it depends on other factors like skill sets and logistics. Those are subsequent, editions of the series that we will look into. But purely from looking at, which sectors are growing fast, where the concentration is increasing, etc. So one lens to answer this question is the segments or the sectors that are growing fast in terms of trade are probably easier to get a foothold into. On that, we would highlight integrated circuits, chemicals, and pharma are segments which over the last 5 years have seen meaningful acceleration, right? And here I would really distinguish not all of electronics, it is the upstream that is really doing well. Whereas we look at downstream, like mobile phones and consumer electronics, they're actually growing fairly slow. And so are auto sector. Auto sector is actually fairly growing slow. That's one lens. The second lens is to basically try and see which are these sectors where the big players are becoming bigger and more well entrenched, and hence difficult for a new guy to come and take a foothold. And which are the segments where the breakup of market shares and disruptions are already in place, and market share shifts are already underway. So for that, we have identified that mobile phones and textiles are places where the big are becoming bigger, whereas medical devices and integrated circuits are sectors where there is disruption happening. Mind you, at this point, I think I should clarify, we're not really looking at companies gaining or losing market share. We are basically looking at economies and countries gaining and losing market share, because this is basically looking at where supply chains are located. And those shifts are already happening in a big way in medical devices and ICs.
Got it. That's very useful. So keeping the country perspective in mind, I mean, I believe in the last couple of years, a lot of the commentary on supply chain has been about companies moving out of China, right? But let me turn it around and ask you, what are the Chinese companies themselves thinking about the whole situation, and how are they preparing for this shift that is happening under the surface?
Yes, I think it's actually a very, you know, important part to this whole puzzle. I would say China, the Chinese manufacturing capabilities are, in many sectors far ahead of anybody else in the world. They have, you know, they have a lot of capacity, of course, but I think they're probably also conscious of the fact that, you know, you can't have a lot of concentration of supply chains physically in one region or within one country. There are geopolitical, worries creeping up, there are tariff worries creeping up, and so on. And, you know, there has been a fair amount of time when China's Chinese government has supported industry, and maybe now other governments are willing to support. So it's actually, you know, important to acknowledge that a lot of the Chinese companies, the big manufacturing players, are keen to go outside China and invest and build capacities in other markets. For instance, recent surveys done by our teams, you know, we found that a lot of the CFOs of manufacturing companies, they prefer Mexico, Indonesia, and some of the other ASEAN markets as, mm-hmm. Places where they want to, go and invest. And I think it's also important to acknowledge that probably the government in China is also okay with this. I mean, in terms of diversifying and encouraging Chinese companies to build their capabilities and infrastructure in other markets. I think that's going to be a very important trend. If you're a economy that is reasonably aligned geopolitically with all this, then you actually get to benefit from these inbound FDI from China. And there are economies in Eastern Europe, Mexico, ASEAN, who are all actually, very heavily participating in this.
Interesting. Okay. That's something to kind of keep an eye on, I believe. So, Sunil, I understand that your report has close to 24 case studies, right, from around the world, mostly analyzing both companies to understand what worked in terms of their strategies, and particularly also government policies, which is something that you kind of also alluded to. Give us a couple of examples, as in which one struck you as the most insightful, or perhaps one that can elaborate the points that you just made earlier.
Yes. So, I think if I were to quickly summarize what we learned in terms of what can move supply chains, right, and I'll try to list out a couple of case studies which kind of support this. People talk about labor costs, but labor cost is only one of the aspects. It's not the primary aspect. Supply chains, we realized move because governments are giving you tax breaks and tax incentives. There are free trade agreements, which can shift things in a big way. Just the fact that you are close to a large market, in terms of geographical position, that matters a lot. You have good infrastructure that supports the coming up of capacities. Those are the reasons that we really saw. So in that context, right, if I look at some of the markets in Europe, in the EU zone, in the free trade zone, they benefit from being very close to large consumption markets, and they benefit from the free trade agreements, and some of those governments have actually been giving fantastic tax breaks and tax incentives, which has been a very big reason for some of the chemicals and pharma companies to go into either Belgium or Ireland, for instance, or some of the auto companies, including from Germany or from China, setting up capacities over there. I mentioned earlier on in the podcast about Singapore and Mexico. again, very focused industry-specific incentives that were given 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and consistently built upon. You spend a lot of time in nurturing the talent, the skill levels of people, so that you have a really large pool of people who can actually do the. In this case, I'm talking about electronics as the industry. We also looked at case studies of markets which have actually lost their, big role in the supply chain from the past, markets like Germany or Japan, for instance. And we could, clearly identify that it's not that the companies have actually lost out. It's just that the companies have chosen to relocate because they found better commerciality and better economics to place their, supply chains elsewhere. So I think, these are some of the, case studies without getting into too specific details to bore you guys that we really found.
Well, that was wonderful, Sunil. Thank you so much. So let me quickly summarize everything that we learned from Sunil today on this topic of global supply chain shifts. Number one, in terms of market share gains in global supply chain, UAE, Singapore, and Malaysia have shown broad gains across segments. Vietnam and Mexico's gains are strong, but very concentrated in few segments. For India, over a 5 to 10 year period, its position in global supply chains has been small and mostly stable. Second point, we learned that in terms of sectors, it may be easier to gain share in a faster growing global segment than in a slower one, which on paper might be a larger sector. For example, chemicals and pharma are fast growing segments in recent years, as well as upstream electronics and integrated circuits within hardware tech. And finally, we should keep an eye on Chinese companies with fairly good capabilities who are going global. They are setting up operations overseas outside of China, for example, in Indonesia and Mexico, and raising capacities as they prepare to navigate trade restrictions, benefit from cost differentials, and access destination market demand. Well, that's all that we have for today. As discussed, we will continue to do a lot more work on this topic in the future. So keep listening to UBS Global Research Pod Hub for more such insightful audio commentaries. Until then, this is me, Sambuddha Ray, signing off for now.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG, its subsidiaries and or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax, and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content. It has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory, or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. UBS 2024, the key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.